Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2011 documentary film Sex Plus Money, A National Search for Human Worth, directed by Joel Angyal. The members of the panel will include Amanda McGill, Nebraska State Senator from District 26 in Lincoln, Anna Brewer, an agent with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and Jean Klein, Executive Director of Project Harmony. The moderator will be Lorraine Chang, a board member of the Women's Fund of Omaha. This program, presented in cooperation with the Women's Fund of Omaha, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, May 7, 2013, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. In 2007, a group of student photojournalists embarked on a journey through over 20 nations on every inhabitable continent, motivated by their love for photography and their passion for justice. At the outset, their experiences seemed diverse, even random. However, a common thread of human suffering emerged as their travels exposed them to a dark, seldom-discussed side of humanity, children being bought and sold to satisfy the sexual pleasures of other humans. Upon returning to the United States, the students produced a book called Sex Plus Money, A Global Search for Human Worth. This collection of photographs and stories explores the realities of human trafficking and offers readers a global perspective on the consequences of abusing two of the most powerful forces in the world, sex and money. While researching to write their book, the journalists were shocked to discover that the same injustice was happening on their own soil. Currently, across America, between 100,000 and 300,000 minors are being sexually exploited. Meanwhile, most Americans are oblivious to this staggering truth, complicated by the unfortunate fact that organizations such as National Public Radio give legitimacy to the practice by referring to the victims of pornography and prostitution as, quote, sex workers. As a result, what started as a global search for human worth became a national search for human worth. Sex Plus Money, A National Search for Human Worth is a feature-length documentary that follows a group of photojournalists as they travel in an RV on their second journey, this time across the United States, seeking to understand how the sexual exploitation of children has become the nation's fastest-growing form of organized crime and what can be done to stop it. The goal of the Sex Plus Money documentary is to bring freedom to those enslaved. As the tagline of the film states, "What one generation tolerates, the next generation embraces." Here now to introduce the program is Molly Welch, Operations Manager of Film Streams.
I am really excited for tonight's screening of Sex Plus Money, and I want to thank our partner, the Women's Fund of Omaha, for their commitment to improving the lives of Omaha area women and girls. That is applaudable, if I've ever heard of something being applaudable. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And it is my pleasure to welcome Larissa Johnson. She is the president of the Women's Fund Board of Directors, and she would like to welcome you too and say a few words.
Thank you, Molly. That is a tough act to follow. I'm super excited to see so many faces in the crowd. I'm excited that the theater is full. I see a lot of familiar faces, but I also see some new faces, so I'd like to take a few minutes and share what the Women's Fund does. The Women's Fund, as Molly said, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the lives of women and girls here in the Omaha area. As a trusted voice in the community, we identify critical issues, fund innovative solutions, and influence dynamic change. I've had the privilege of serving on the board of directors of the Women's Fund for approximately 6 years. During that time, I've seen how a talented group of women committed to working together can make a difference in our community. One of the ways that we do that is through awarding grants to other nonprofits. We give grants to other nonprofit organizations addressing needs that our research has identified as being critical to addressing needs of area women and girls here in the community. During the past 20 years, we've invested nearly $1.5 million here in the Omaha area. We're not afraid to tackle the tough issues, and we often do that through education. For the past 16 years, the Women's Fund has published Today's Omaha Woman magazine. A recent issue looked at prostitution in Omaha, and the current magazine focuses on opportunities for women in the trades. I saw many of you picking up the magazine as you came in the door tonight and signed up for more information on the Women's Fund, but if you didn't, please pick up copies as you leave tonight. They're in the lobby for you. It's my pleasure tonight to recognize the Women's Fund Giving Circle. The Giving Circle is a group of women who've been meeting for several years now to promote philanthropy. They began looking into commercial sex trafficking a few years ago. They were listening to experts, researching the issue, and gathering information on best practices. These women then awarded $15,000 of their own money to Project Harmony for a program addressing childhood sex trafficking here in Omaha. Tonight's film is presented by the Women's Fund in cooperation with the Giving Circle and in collaboration with Film Streams. We are grateful to both groups for helping raise public awareness about the issue of sex trafficking through the screening of Sex and Money, a national search for human worth. This film follows a group of photojournalists as they travel across the United States, seeking to understand how the sexual exploitation of children has become the nation's fastest growing form of organized crime. Unfortunately, it's a crime that's occurring right here in Omaha.
Powerful movie and a very complex set of issues. When I first became aware of this issue, couple of years ago, it just sort of took over my psyche because it's something that you just don't forget about. I think that the Giving Circle and the Women's Fund has really taken up this issue as something that we now know exists in our community and is something that we think if we can create more public awareness about it, the power of a small group of individuals can start to make a difference. I think that it starts with each of us recognizing that this is an issue that is happening here locally. And so the purpose of the panel tonight is to bring this issue to the home front. I think the movie really gave you all a really good picture of the issue from a variety of different perspectives, but the panelists that we've convened tonight are really experts in what is happening here, and we're so delighted that they're taking the time out of their busy schedules to be with us. Our purpose is to look at what is happening here in the Omaha metropolitan area, to find out what's being done about it, and to talk about what else we can do. And so with that introduction, I'm going to introduce each of our panelists and ask them to speak for just a very short 5-minute introduction about their perspective on this issue, and to then open it up to questions and answers from the audience. So first up, I want to introduce Anna Brewer, who is Special Agent Anna Brewer from the FBI. She is the coordinator of the Child Exploitation Task Force for the FBI, and we're very pleased to have Anna with us tonight. Anna.
Thank you. My name is Anna Brewer, and I am a Special Agent with the FBI assigned here in Omaha. I've been employed by the FBI for over 18 years as a special agent, and for most of my career, I've been involved in investigating crimes against children matters, specifically child prostitution, starting in 2006. I moved to Omaha in 2008, and I was assigned to the Violent Crime Task Force, and I was given the awesome task of putting together the Innocence Lost Task Force, which is the FBI's task force to combat child exploitation. And through that task force, we've been able to conduct a lot of proactive undercover operations. We respond to incidents as they happen, and we try and identify those who are exploiting our children in our community. And I think the one message that I really want to convey, and I open it up to questions after my two other guests have spoken and introduced themselves, is that I need you to leave here tonight and understand that this is happening in our community. This happens in Omaha. This happens in La Vista. This happens in Council Bluffs. This happens in Shenandoah. This happens in McCook. It happens in our community. I'm honored to be here, and thank you very much.
I'm pleased to introduce Senator Amanda McGill. She is a state senator from the northeast part of Lincoln, District 26, and a program director for the YWCA in Lincoln. Amanda.
Hello, and thank you for having me here tonight. A couple years ago, when I was first elected to the legislature in 2006, I had no idea that human trafficking was a problem here. In fact, I'd even had a fellow from Ukraine come and spend a month in my office, and she was very interested in human trafficking, and I sent her to the university to go visit with the experts there, not realizing that I should be going with her and learning more about it. But then a couple years ago, while I was sitting on the Judiciary Committee, a senator brought a bill about escort services and regulating that industry. And like some of the people in the video, at first I'm like, oh, they're just trying to regulate morals on people. But then the chief of police was in there and the head of our Lincoln City mission telling us about how many homeless youth they get who've been trafficked. And that very much opened my eyes, and I've spent the last 2 years working on legislation to stop human trafficking in our state. We created a task force last year that's working on research and finding law and picked out some law enforcement curriculum. And this year we're looking at making sure that no one under the age of 18 can be prosecuted for prostitution. So at least covering those young people as well as some other penalty related issues. But that's what brings me here today.
Thank you. And Gene Klein, he's the executive director of Project Harmony, which is a nonprofit organization providing coordinated and child-centered services for child abuse victims, including victims of child trafficking.
Thank you. Project Harmony is one of now today 750 child advocacy centers across the country, and collectively we see about 300,000 children a year who were physically and sexually abused. And the number of children that are being sex trafficked is increasing every year across the country. We provide forensic interviews of the children that are being evaluated. We have a medical team that evaluates them medically, and then have advocates that work with people like Anna to make sure that the family and the children get the services that they need after an investigation of child abuse. We are one of seven centers in Nebraska. So there's a center in Lincoln, Norfolk, Grand Island, Kearney, Scotts Bluff, and North Platte. So glad to be here as well.
Thank you. So with that, I think we'll open it up for questions, comments.
Thanks for being here. I'm curious about the semantics of the word trafficking. The movie made it kind of clear, but I'm wondering if you can elaborate, because to me, trafficking implies that there's at least one other individual that's complicit in the victimization of the victim. And it's not clear to me that that's always the case or always the current case with prostitution. And so are we, like the film implied, to sort of are we to understand that the victimization could have occurred decades ago, and how does that relate to current public policy and law enforcement as it relates to the situation of these women?
I'll jump first.
Okay.
I have a problem with sex, the word trafficking, and all of us, I think, have an image of what trafficking looks like, and maybe some of that was in the movie. It's really sexual abuse. And so when you use the traffic, yeah, the money is involved, and maybe that's how we get to the trafficking part of this, but it's really sexual abuse. Whether they are children or women, it's really abusing people sexually. That's what it should be called.
Whether there's a financial
operation or not. That's right.
Yeah, and for instance, like human trafficking doesn't mean you have to be trafficked from one location to another. No, that has nothing to do with the definition anymore.
Hi, thank you for being here. I noticed throughout the film that there was very little reference to boys being victims, and I was curious if, I mean, I'm assuming that that statistic exists here, but I just was curious if you wanted to share any information about boys involved in this unfortunate industry.
I can respond to that from a law enforcement perspective. It is true that statistically the number of young men or young males that are arrested or that we identify as victims is disproportionately low. There may be a couple reasons for that. One is that boys tend to not report as often as girls. There's more of a stigma attached to being sexually abused if you are a male. But the FBI is being proactive and trying to address those males that are being exploited. But there's also another population, and that's the transgender, transsexual population that I have actually come into contact with here in Omaha. And there needs to be social services and resources available, which there are, not as many as, you know, for young females and young children. But we are addressing that, and we're not just out there looking for young girls. We're out there to save anyone that's being exploited.
And while I don't have statistics on this, the people who work with runaway or homeless youth or kids who were in foster care and had nowhere to go know that there are sexual acts being done for food, for shelter, for drugs, you know, for that population, for that the boys are falling prey to that just like the girls do.
Would you talk about the specifics of our new arena and the La Vista thing, I think, that Anna was involved with?
The case
that you...
The football game? The football?
Mm-hmm. The football and... No, just...
I have traveled around Iowa and Nebraska and some other states providing a case study on a case that originated out of Omaha. The victims were all from the Papillion-La Vista High School area. They were recruited at a high school football game by a pimp that was 18 years old. And the significance of that case is that I think most people don't think that this problem happens here. And not only did this happen here, but it happened at a local high school football game when the parents are sitting in the stands looking down at the soda pop stand or the hot dog stand and watching the kids do what kids do, you know, flirt and talk and hang out at a football game. And you think when you up in the stands as a parent that your kids are safe because you can see them, when in fact that's not necessarily the case. And as you saw in the movie, children are recruited from shopping malls and from skating rinks and from places where it's very obvious right in front of you, but we don't see it. We did find the person that was recruiting, and he was convicted, and he was sentenced to 14 years. He was not the number one pimp. The number one pimp in that case was a female, which is, again, out of the norm. And she was sentenced to 17 and a half years. She was prosecuted by the United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Iowa in 2010.
Yes. Can you talk about what's going on in Nebraska or Omaha as far as legislation, or if there's things that we as citizens of the city can be doing?
I'll take that. And I mean, I'm at the state level, obviously, but there's a bill pending right now, my bill LB 255, which is the one that will decriminalize for... least show that if you're under 18, you're not making the choice to be a prostitute. So making sure that those minors can't be charged with prostitution, as well as making sure that if someone is caught soliciting a minor, that penalty is a felony as opposed to a class one misdemeanor like it is now. And a couple of other things in that bill, including tasking that human trafficking task force with providing the legislature with recommendations next year on how we can help provide services. For me, that's the part that is heartbreaking to me, that, okay, we're trying to make the laws better. We're trying to help law enforcement, but we still have more to do in terms of having alternatives. I mean, that statistic about how there are only 100 beds in the country, and maybe there are a few more now since that movie's been made, but that's what's very devastating to me, is the fact that we don't have enough resources and alternatives. Like, I've been working with a young woman who had been in foster care who started her own escort service in Lincoln. And, you know, she had other girls working for her. And it's her dream now to have a nonprofit where she can help recruit girls off the street, you know, to get them back into a safe place and to help them provide a different life for themselves. And so over the next year, I plan to do a lot of research and looking at what these programs are across the country that are doing a good job, the great things that Project Harmony and other folks are doing, and see how we in the legislature can help to coordinate and provide for services. There are a lot of people interested in helping and moving forward from there.
And I'd just like to add that Senator McGill has really done her homework and brought in the folks from the Polaris Project who were referenced in the film, because they have been ranking states and analyzing state statutes to determine what makes for a really comprehensive set of state laws in this arena. And she's been working to really raise the bar for Nebraska state laws.
I'd like to add one more thing, and it's that to prevent this, there are a lot of other bills that can help to do that. You know, I want to, not to be self-promoting, but I'm going to be, but I have a bill to help extend foster care services to the age of 21 so that these youth aren't on the streets, you know, and have a roof over their head and aren't having to turn to this. My priority bill is a children's mental health bill to try to get more screenings for our kids in the primary care doctor's offices. Because if we can determine when they're a lot younger that they've been sexually abused, you know, and it's showing up in depression or something, then that's getting them help sooner and then they're not vulnerable. And so when you're looking at how to fight human trafficking, it's not just the bill that says human trafficking. It's everything we can do to help prevent our youth from being vulnerable as they're aging.
And if I could jump onto that, the other child advocacy centers around the country have identified kids who've been sexually abused, and we see about 2,000 a year from Omaha, and the most of these kids are under the age of 6. So we've got to do a better job of taking care of those young kids so that when they are 14, 16, et cetera, they're not looking to the next loving arms to be the person that's going to take care of them. So extending the care of kids to 21 is huge, and it's almost embarrassing that we don't. We kind of shut off and say, you're 18 now, you're on your own, but they lose everything. They lose their support for medical care, their support for mental health care if that's needed, and so that is a huge piece. And foster kids are one of the target populations for pimps to go after. They see them as throwaways. They see them as kids that haven't been connected to good, positive role models, and so they become the target. So we've got to do a better job of taking care of those kids in the system.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Next question. Yes.
Good evening. Some of you. I know. Hi. Thanks for coming, and I appreciate your interest and your support on this issue. Just as a person who's just a mom of young kids, I know what I can do to help my family not, you know, end up in a situation like this. But what could I do to help other kids in Omaha? Where would a person go to be able to donate their time? Or how can I help other children who don't have, you know, two parents that are at home or parents that are aware of these issues?
Well, I think anytime you can volunteer, whether that's being a big brother, big sister, being a CASA volunteer, mm-hmm. Anytime you're giving your time, I think time is the most valuable thing we have. And so anytime you give your time to an organization, whether it's a nonprofit like Project Harmony or the Yes House, I think there's staff from the Yes House up in the back doing street outreach for kids. Your time is the best gift you can give. I think the other thing is anytime you see a news story on child abuse or sex trafficking or something like that, pull your own children aside, pull your nieces and nephews and other family members and say, did you see the news? Did you hear what that story was about? We have to talk about this. And unfortunately, we kind of turn the TV and we don't want the kids to see this, or we don't want teenagers to know that this happened in La Vista or Papillion. We want to shelter them from this kind of information, but they need to know that this happens, and it happens to their peers or their friends, could be kids that are being pulled into this. So you have to have the honest conversation with kids.
Mm-hmm. And from the law enforcement perspective, be vigilant and be a good witness and call me. Call the FBI. You would be surprised if you started looking around at how much of this you see every day. For example, if you're at a major store, department store, on a Monday at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you see children that should probably be in school running around the store, that's a clue. If you work at an airline and someone is checking in, and the female or one of the people has to turn to someone else and say, can I have my license? Can I have my ID?
That's important because I travel with my husband. I don't ask him for my driver's license. I carry my own driver's license. If you work at a hotel and you go in to clean a room and it's the garbage can is full of condoms, I mean, that's a clue. If you're at a high-end restaurant on a Saturday night and you see what looks to be an inappropriate couple, a very young female with maybe a much older male, the interaction seems a little bit just inappropriate, go get that guy's license plate and call me, because maybe we're already investigating that and maybe I just need a little bit more intelligence. It's the same as what's going on in the terrorism world. We need to be vigilant. We need to be aware of our surroundings. We need to know who's living next door to us, and we need to be observant. And I don't care if my phone rings all day. I will answer it, trust me. The National Human Trafficking Tip Hotline, call it. Because all those tips come to the FBI, and they show up on my desk, and my boss asks me once a month, what have you done with these? And so I'm held accountable. The officers and police, the police detectives and officers with whom I work are held accountable. We have a whole team out there that's willing to take all your information. So please be vigilant.
What's the number?
1-888-377-8888, I think. Do you guys have it?
Yeah. We'll make sure that it's on the Women's Fund website.
888, and then I think it's 377 in the middle. Or something.
Is there a website?
Up there? It was in the movie. Yeah.
It's obvious that the pimps are pawns to a higher game, and they're reporting and they're getting money for higher ups. Is there any progress for those individuals who are, in most cases, not able to be touched legally because of their positions? And also, is there any advanced legislation to prosecute the Johns to the same degree that the prostitutes are being picked up?
From a law enforcement perspective, the Innocence Lost Task Force is conducting proactive undercover operations to identify those clients, those Johns, that are purchasing sex. And they are arrested. They are charged. Sometimes they are incarcerated. Sometimes they're just ticketed or cited, depending on the situation. But law enforcement is responsive to the demand side of this issue.
I'm trying to look up exactly what the penalty is right now, but last year we did increase it a little bit. And, I'll get back to you. I'm going to look up exactly what the penalty is.
Okay. Right here.
Hi, thank you for all coming out. I just have a question about how much of a role does large events like the College World Series or like the Olympic swim trials play in, I guess, the increase of sex trafficking here in Omaha?
Well, I think we see that as a nationwide problem. Special events such as the World Series, the Super Bowl, it does increase the supply and demand for sex. I actually have a case that went to trial in November, and during that case, a pimp from Atlantic City, New Jersey, traveled after picking up a girl in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Little Rock, Arkansas, and he sold the girl from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to an undercover FBI special agent, and the pimp was arrested. He was charged with 12 counts. He was convicted subsequent to a jury trial, and he is facing sentencing in the near future. He's looking at a very, very significant sentence.
I was going to ask how you guys maintain that balance. I find it hard for myself to not get consumed with this and feel incapacitated. How do you, working in it every hour of every day, do that?
I have amazing, amazing survivors. They carry me through it. I have amazing colleagues. The FBI's victim witness advocate is in the audience today, who's my rock. The task force officers with whom I work are my rock, and I have an incredible husband, so I'm blessed.
Yeah, I think the same. We've got some staff here from Project Harmony, just very good people who are in this. And when you can move a family or a kid out of a situation or turn them on a new path, that's what keeps you in it, because it's the success stories that, even though they may not be as many as you want, those are the stories that keep you coming back and saying, okay, we did it, let's do it, let's do the next one.
Yeah, I would say, like I admitted to earlier, it's very overwhelming at times, and I don't feel like I'm doing enough at times. And I really do just focus on the domestic end of things. I can't even talk about international statistics because my brain just would explode. You know, I try to focus on what I can affect. But, you know, just the little steps we're taking, and every time when I make a Facebook post, knowing that I'm educating more and more people about how real this issue is. And just to clarify, last year we did make pimping is pandering, a class 4 felony. So we increased the penalty last year. That is also what it is for human trafficking in Nebraska, because we actually have a statute that's pandering and one that's specific to human trafficking, since there could be slightly different evidence. Although almost all of the cases for human trafficking go through the FBI. We've just had one here, and it was that mother in Kearney who was trafficking her 2 kids. Right. But now that we have the laws, you know, one part of my bill this year is also just making sure that our language and our laws reflects federal law as best as possible, to make sure that as cases start popping up that are really just happening in Nebraska, that we're prepared to be prosecuting those. But a lot of it crosses borders.
Yes. Good evening. This is in relation to the question that was asked just before the last one about the large venues, the sports events, and the huge venues that seem to attract more trafficking, and there's a growing awareness about that. I think there's also a growing awareness about the training that can be helpful with people like the staffs in hotels, talking to hotel management people, making sure that they know what to look for. I would imagine the same thing is true in malls and police departments, as well as the general public. And I'm wondering if you're aware if that kind of training is beginning to happen here in Omaha, if people are becoming more aware of that, and like just us, just the examples you gave of what to look for. Mm-hmm. Is that growing as fast as the trafficking is growing?
Yeah, part of the grant that we received from the Women's Fund was to do training. She's one of our best trainers. And along with another prosecutor, Dan McGinn from Council Bluffs, we think events like this are just the tip of what needs to happen. And we really see training on 3 different levels: training for the general public, training for those that might be potential identifiers of the issue, so hotel workers, police detectives and frontline police officers, street workers that are out in the field, foster parents, those that kind of might have kids that are vulnerable. And then I think we still have a whole long way to go with regard to developing new protocols for what do we do with the kids and how do we get them access to services. And you saw the residential program. A lot of other communities have developed similar types, Miami and Dallas in particular. Their challenge is the kids don't stay. You know, they might come for 2 or 3 days, and you don't want to lock them in, and it's a real difficult issue. You know, the one stat about going back to your pimp 7 times, it's the same issue with kids that are on the run. And so, yes, they're out of that situation for a little bit, but you've got to create services that allow them to come and go, but hopefully move them further down the right path. So training is huge. We are doing a conference with the U.S. Attorney's Office in October. Any of you are welcome to come here at the Hilton. We think there will be 10 states sponsored through the U.S. Attorney's Office and that will be coming to this conference. There will be a whole track on sex trafficking that Anna and I think you're doing. Yes,
Kathy Thompson.
Yes, yeah. Are going to be doing a whole piece on for a full day. So there's a lot of education that needs to be happening, and we're just getting started.
And in the last 6 to 8 months, Kathy Thompson and I have presented over 35 times. We've presented to hospitals. We've presented to law enforcement agencies. We've presented to hotel personnel. We've gone to universities, churches, anyone the Rotary Club. We've been there. We've been to Kiwanis. Pretty much anyone that wants us to come, I mean, it's free. We work for you, and this is the training that we want to provide. So I will give you my phone number at the end. I'm not giving it out now.
And last year we did pass, state law saying that law enforcement have to go through have to have this as part of their curriculum now. Because what you see is maybe some police officers who see a prostitute and think of them in the traditional way. as somebody who's committing a crime. And of course this woman isn't going to open up to them about who her pimp was if they're treating her like that. So how do you, you know, create a relationship that makes that woman feel safe? You know, maybe we won't get to her on that first time she's picked up, but maybe if there's the right amount of compassion, you know, at some point she would be willing to open up more. It's part of the problem with prosecuting pimps is the women, like the video said, don't say who it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes, up there.
Where can men who are abusers go for help in our community?
Well, there's a program that Lutheran Family Service runs called R-Safe, and she's up here, or somebody's up here, I think, from that program, that specifically deal with adults who have sexually abused children. There's also a program that they unfortunately had to create that we call it the 10 to 14 R-Safe, which are kids that are 10 to 14 years of age sexually acting out on younger children. It unfortunately, they've had 200 probably children a year in the 10 to 14 age group. But Lutheran Family Services is where I would say to go.
And the FBI's victim witness advocate and myself have partnered up with Heartland Family Services, and they've put together a flyer for these individuals. They've also, the Heartland Family Services people have come out with us on our undercover operations. And after the arrest of a client, they have met with that client immediately subsequent to the arrest to offer those services.
You know, and one of the things that I plan on looking at over the next year isn't just victim services, but it is, you know, some states or cities have John schools, and just investigating the effectiveness of that, just like the effectiveness of prostitution court. And so keeping them in the court system so they have to be separated from their pimp or whatever, but trying to get them into a diversionary program. These are all things that, you know, trying our best to, there are good examples out there. And so how do we find those evidence-based ones or choose which evidence-based ones would be most effective?
Thank you for coming. I was wondering, do you guys think that reporting human trafficking in something like the Unified Crime Reports would help with recognizing it and being able to tell how much is in the United States and be able to track it?
I just think there's so much out there. I don't know if you'll ever really be able to put your finger on the pulse of what the true problem is.
Thanks a lot for coming. I thought the film did a really good job of tying the link between pornography and some of the issues surrounding sex trafficking. And I understand that obviously from a local level, we may not be able to do a whole lot in regards to pornography. However, it seems like we could do a lot regarding strip clubs and other quote-unquote legal sex offerings. So what are some things that you guys are doing or that you would suggest that we could do to help combat those quote-unquote legal avenues that people are going to?
I would, you know, we're trying to work out language on the escort service bill that Senator Christensen introduced. It has been a little bit difficult on a state level because it's traditionally cities, municipalities that regulate strip clubs, and actually strip club or stripper is an in-state statute. Because it's a local ordinance issue. And so we're trying to work through that, but if we can't get the language perfect at the state level, it's something you can go to your city council folks and talk about wanting, so that it would become a more regulated industry and, you know, hopefully prevent some of the human trafficking. But honestly, when I see some of that, I think back to how important it is to talk to our kids about sex. So when they see pornography, they have a better understanding of it, or they're not seeking answers by going to the internet. You know, even one of my best friends had a daughter who asked her what an orgasm is. Mom said, "I don't know." So she went online and looked it up. And so that's where I volunteered to take her daughter to Barnes & Noble and pick out a book about, you know, becoming a teenager and the changes in your body. And so while her mom was too nervous and anxious to do that, I stepped in and to help have a trusted adult talk to a child. I know I work with National Organization to Prevent Unplanned Pregnancy, and they have remarkable numbers on how your actually talking to your kids about sex prevents them from having sex as early. You know, even if you're telling them you shouldn't be, you know, having that conversation really helps prevent some of these problems.
If I could jump in, what we're seeing are children being sexualized. You saw a little bit of that, even at a younger age. And even today, there are lingerie stores, I won't mention the name Victoria's Secret, but who are really promoting, in fact, they have a whole new line that is just targeted at 14-year-olds. And it's with filthy words across the crotch or the butt of what, or I guess, our underwear. It starts with you as a parent saying, we're not going to buy that. I'm not going to let you get that. And when we walk by the store, we're not going to stop and shop. You walk on, or you use that opportunity to say, that is degrading to women. We don't do that in our family. So you have to start mentioning, using those kinds of opportunities to teach children at a very young age.
Hello, thank you so much for being here tonight. I work primarily with a bunch of people that are involved in the juvenile justice system, and if all three of you perhaps could kind of talk a little bit about the connection between sexual abuse, human trafficking issues, and those who are incarcerated in the juvenile system, I would appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. I was at Geneva in November and met with a group of young ladies there and threw that out there. I wanted to hear about their experiences at the Youth Rehabilitation and Treatment Center, but I asked, you know, what is the state of sex with kids your age? And one of the girls told me, she had been trafficked when she was about 12, and the youngest girl in the house she was at was 8. And so, you know, clearly there are connections. And a number of the other girls had at least had some sort of sexual assault, or that they were willing to admit to me. I mean, some of the others may not have. And I'm struggling, like what was already shared about how to, as we identify the youth, say they are in the juvenile justice system, do we have a separate wing that directly, you know, helps them with their issues? You know, as I've been talking with senators about it, if they haven't just been identified as a victim but are also in the juvenile justice system for some reason, if we need to have a separate area to be serving their particular needs, you know, it's something we need to be looking at.
The national stats are pretty obvious. More than 90% of the kids that are in the juvenile justice system had been abused or were in an abusive home or were in a home where there was serious domestic violence. So we have to treat them as victims. And, you know, today in Omaha, there are more than 100 kids that are running. And Omaha police are searching for kids in the metro that are on run. They show up as juvenile justice kids, but again, in the video, what were they running from? What are they running away from? That's what we've got to do a better job of figuring out.
And I'd pretty much echo the same. I mean, the FBI has a victim-oriented approach, and we look at all the girls and boys that we come into contact with as victims.
Hi. I have a question. And personally, I am much more interested in dealing with the demand side rather than the supply side. And we keep focusing on the supply side. 20 years ago, Omaha, we took a poll, we meaning the Women's Fund, took a poll of people in our community about their perspective as to whether domestic violence was a family personal issue or whether it was a community illegal criminal act. 20 years ago, the general population said it's a personal issue. And so if your neighbor, you know there's beating going on, there's no major responsibility for you to report it. That has changed, and it's changed dramatically. What we have here is, I'm curious, how many, when you go home this evening, ask the next 10 people whether or not a person who hires a prostitute is in fact committing a serious crime. And whether they're committing that crime affects the community's life. Does that person buying another person, are they degrading the lives of people in Omaha, and to what extent?
because I believe that many of the people that you that we hold as good people, if you got them to honestly respond, would say, you know, it's two consenting people. It doesn't affect the quality of life in our community. That being said, what do you think is the proper deterrent for the buyers? What is the appropriate, proper, and most significant question, effective deterrent?
Well, I'll start, but you guys are the law people. I think if you look at this issue and compare it to domestic violence or child abuse really was this conversation maybe 35 years ago. Domestic violence was this conversation 20 years ago. Hopefully we'll learn a lot what we've learned from domestic violence in getting that this does happen in the community, that people aren't choosing to be in a relationship where they're being beaten or abused. So we have to keep this conversation moving much, much faster pace than we've done with domestic violence and child abuse in general. What are the things that have moved that forward? You have to have stiff penalties. You have to hold people accountable. You have to give them the authority to charge people with as much evidence as they need to, but you have to hold people accountable and charge them. There's, you know, nothing more worse than public humiliation. People don't want their name on a website as a sex offender. Maybe that's where this goes, is if you're soliciting, you become on the John register.
One of the first things that clients will say to me after we arrest them,
don't tell,
is my wife going to find out? Is my job going to find out? That's the first thing they say to me. So I applaud your rhetorical statement. I hope we go home and think about this. But the FBI uses the laws that are on the books to aggressively and proactively address this issue. So we can only be as aggressive as the laws allow us.
I don't think I have anything per se to add, you know, because I've been struggling with exactly what the right approach is. And the bill I have this year has changed a couple times. And in the original green copy, there was a John's website in the green copy of the bill. It's not in the amended version right now. It could be put back in. Part of what I, you know, there are lots of things that go on legislatively and changes and cost, because maintaining a website costs money. As well, and trying to figure out, there are a lot of shaming examples around the country. They've been at the local, like at a city level, and so trying to determine if statewide is the way to go, if it should be a local thing, as well as looking at the penalties for solicitation. Right now, it's a class one misdemeanor for the first time you're caught. The second time, it becomes a felony. And there are people who want to make it a felony on the first time through. And, you know, and I have to struggle all of the impacts of that. It means more people in jail, you know, and, you know, some people feel that's harsh for the first time. I don't know. I'm just throwing out there, like, all of the thoughts and considerations that have gone into it. And I am still personally struggling with what the most effective way is to work on that supply side or the demand side. I'm sorry.
We have time for just a few more. I know we have one in the middle in the back, but just a few more.
Hi, thank you for coming. We were curious. We know that in Illinois and Texas, they have implemented what's been tagged a poll tax that helps fund nonprofits that work with victims. And we're wondering, since we are a city that likes to tax a lot, if that's something we've considered.
Is that like a tax on strip clubs or
strip clubs?
Oh.
Alcohol.
I had not heard of that before.
Google it. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, that's so. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Again, like, you know, state versus city, and, you know, looking at what the best options are. But, you know, it's something that if we don't feel we can do it at the state level, it could be a city thing. You know, and lobbying your city council people for that.
Any other questions?
There's one right here.
Oh, we have one up front. Oh,
Hi.
I have a question about the legislature and whether you want to say this publicly now or not, but can you gauge what the sense of the legislative members are towards your bills and whether they would enjoy hearing from a lot of us talk about that?
They were very supportive last year of the task force. This year, frankly, the speaker made my bill a speaker priority under the notion that it wouldn't be very controversial. So making changes that, like, Senator Chambers wouldn't filibuster. Like, we're having a lot of filibusters right now. And sometimes he's opposed to stricter penalties. You know, he feels other therapeutic approaches might be best. So trying to negotiate all of that. But here, like, in the next year is when we're going to need help trying to get state funding to help victims. Because Senator Sinowicki back in 2006 and 2007 put money into prostitution rehabilitation services. Both times it was vetoed by the governor. And when I tried to get money for it last year, HHS came in and opposed it. Each time, like in the vetoes or in the testimony of HHS, they said, well, the governor said that we don't fund services for people who've chosen to break the law. So we need exactly. There are lots of examples of us doing that. We have drug courts. We have, you know, our jail system is supposed to help people come out better. Not that it always is successful at that. I think it has a lot of failings there. But I mean, we do it all the time. And so clearly the governor doesn't understand human trafficking. And I've had a couple senators come up to me and say, we're really glad you're calling this human trafficking now because I can support it more than supporting services for a prostitute. And so I guess using the term human trafficking is a plus in terms of how we communicate it with people. But, you know, I'll go in next year and make a strong pitch, and I'll need people's help, particularly next year when it comes to investing money into services or creating a prostitution court or whatever we want to call it, whatever the alternative is or the recommendation is.
Laura, last question.
Yeah. So I think the thing we haven't talked about is the internet. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so huge because it's a free speech issue. Mm-hmm. But what do we do? I mean, taxing pole dancing isn't probably going to get you much, but you just wonder.
I don't know what the answer is, and especially for so many youth who are already vulnerable. Like, I see them talk about the increasing incidence of this or increasing youth, and I can't help but think that because we have more families and young people living in vulnerable situations with single-parent households, and, you know, ultimately, you know, even if your kid has access to the internet, if you're talking to your kid about these things, I think it helps them have the proper perspective. But when they're young people in a single parent household, or, you know, you can't control everybody else's kids who might be out there victimizing it. I don't know what the answer is. I'll be honest. I don't know.
I think federally there's a lot of effort going on around trying to identify child pornography sites and shutting those down, and you know, the images that are unfortunately out there are in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of images of children that are being sexually abused and videotaped, and then it's being sold and put up on white websites. So it's a prolific problem.
And the FBI has great liaison with major social media. And we get so many tips. I mean, we get reports from various websites immediately, and they go above and beyond to help us, especially when it's a crime against a child, you know. Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
Well, I want to end this evening by asking you to thank our panelists, Senator McGill, Special Agent Anna Brewer, and Jean Klein for their time and attention to this issue.
You've been listening to a program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. We've heard a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2011 documentary film Sex Plus Money, A National Search for Human Worth, directed by Joel Angyal. The members of the panel have included Amanda McGill, Nebraska State Senator from District 26 in Lincoln, Anna Brewer, an agent with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and Jean Klein, Executive Director of Project Harmony. The moderator was Lorraine Chang, a board member of the Women's Fund of Omaha. This program, presented in collaboration with the Women's Fund of Omaha, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, May 7, 2013, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Chris Harding Thornton, Molly Welch, Hallie Sharkey, and Jim Foyt of FilmStreams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. If you missed seeing this film at FilmStreams, or would like to see it again, there will be a showing this Thursday evening, September 19th at 7 o'clock at the Seven Oaks Dining Room at Notre Dame, 3439 State Street, as part of their Expand Your Horizon series, sponsored by the Social Justice Committee of the Notre Dame Sisters and Associates. The showing will be followed by a discussion with FBI agent Anna Brewer, who took part in the discussion we heard during this program. More information is available at 402-451-4477. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 300 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.